Hello and welcome to Wise Women, the Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experiences of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. So shall we continue on? There's a lot more wealth in sisterhood. So what you were saying at the end confirms something that I'm suspicious of. Many, many years ago, there was something called the Red Tent in Judaism, where the women were segregated from the men, because I'm sure you know in Orthodox Judaism, a woman is regarded as unclean. Now, did it start that way? Or did
that it didn't
exactly? Or did the women say, "This is our sacred time. We want to be together. We want to have our talking stick sessions and our fires and our this, and we want to be in communion with ourselves." And I wouldn't be at all surprised if it started that way. And maybe it was envied, because let's face it, we women have all the natural rites of life ritual. We had the blood rituals, we had the birth rituals built in.
Yeah.
Whereas the men had to invent theirs.
It's always made me laugh, actually. To me, that the idea that a woman might be unclean at any part of her life is abhorrent. Mm. But when you look at it from the other direction and you think, skipping off to the Red Tent for 4 days a month or something.
Oh, 14. And, seven to 14.
Yeah. Okay. Where you get to just hand your every responsibility over to someone else. I don't know whether that would be a younger woman or to an older woman or to potentially a man, and just go, bye, I'm off to hang out with my sisters. But I could imagine some wily woman who is people are trying to say, well, this Red Tent thing, I don't agree with it. You've got to all come out and get on with the scrubbing the floors or whatever. And them going, oh, but women are unclean. We can't possibly hang out with you lot. We're in a terrible state.
That's the stupidity of it. It could have started just like that.
Yeah.
I knew a Jewish guy who wasn't a very pleasant man, actually, but he said to me when I was asking him about the segregation of women in the synagogue, he said, the women are upstairs because they are at a higher level and they don't have to obey half the commandments. Did you not know? Women don't have to, because women are automatically more spiritual than men. We're the ones who need to take the service. They don't need to.
Wow.
And if you think of it, that's a much better way of looking at it. And the Friday night Sabbath service, I'm sure I've said this before, but it bears saying again, it's the feminine that is the bride that draws in the Sabbath. So it's the woman doing the candles, and it should be a woman. It can be done by a man, just as a woman can do a man's job, a man can do a woman's job from his feminine side, but always receptive side. Let's not get into the sex aspect. But it's entirely the feminine that is the receptor of the Sabbath. And then the man goes off to the synagogue because he has to do the praying. She doesn't have to. You know, she'd just laugh in your face in the old days if you told her that she had to go to the synagogue and do the grunt work, if you like. So you can look at it in either direction, and it would be really nice if you didn't have to look at it in any direction at all. But reversing the polarities is helpful, I think.
Yeah.
We didn't want to be with them. We wanted a little time on our own, and we wanted to respect them to have their time on their own. I don't have a problem with exclusive men's clubs. Let them go and be boys.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with exclusive clubs at all.
No.
In terms of, I just think, I think I feel quite strongly about this, actually, because I just think if we want to have a We Love Sappho the Dog club, and not let anyone in who doesn't know and love Sappho, that's completely our right. Mm. And why shouldn't we? Mm. And you can't join unless you've got the experience of loving Sappho the dog.
Yes.
Fair. What's your problem?
Yeah.
And then it's also, you know, anyone else's right to have clubs that exclude me. I just think that's not what's wrong with any of it. But what's wrong with all of it, in some ways, is that the greater body of society runs exclusive clubs which that's really wrong.
Yes, and it's this fine line of where does it turn from a valid choice of community? This is my community, that, and it's valuable to me. Where does it change from that to thou shalt not? Thou shalt, you know, you can't come in here because you're wrong. It's weird. Where is that point?
I don't know, but I think it's a point that would be really valuable for us to find,
yes,
and to be able to name as a society.
Yes.
Because on the one hand, if it's okay for us to have a club where only the people who love Sappho the dog are allowed to join, why is it not okay for the government to make a club where only the people who've got a vaccination are allowed to party or holiday,
yeah,
or whatever? And it's there. So maybe all clubs are wrong. Maybe they're not. I don't feel at a core level that they are.
No, this is fascinating.
It is, isn't it? Because,
yeah,
because so where is the point at which it becomes not okay? And to me, I think it is probably when excluding me from the club in any way contravenes my sovereignty, properly in balance with, you know, the sovereignty of all beings, properly in balance with service, with a properly good measure of good sense. And again, there's going to be things in the middle that are just so sitting on the fence,
yeah,
as to are we or are we not contravening what could be deemed to be good sense. I don't know.
I'm going to do one of those I don't know what I think until I hear what I say things.
Come on then, let's hear it.
I think it's all about covetousness. I want what you've got. I want to be in your club. I want to be have the status of your club. I don't want to be excluded from what I perceive to be your status. I think we're fairly safe with a club of those who love Sappho the dog, because it doesn't matter. It doesn't,
yeah,
confer status whether you're in that club or not.
Okay, I disagree. I think it's about access.
Okay.
And that if the club is delineated by, so let's say, I mean, I don't even know if this all belongs in the same conversation, but let's say at the moment there is a plan afoot, evidently, to make it a thing that you may not go to a gathering of more than 1,000 people unless you've had a vaccination.
Yeah.
So, on the one hand, I can see that there are arguments for why that would be fair enough.
Mm.
But on the other hand, I think that's tantamount to medical apartheid.
Mm.
And that those who don't want the vaccine, and that just as there are really, really valid reasons,
yeah,
for having one, there are really, really valid reasons for not,
yes,
having one. And that as soon as you start dividing society like that, you're allowed in if you're basically doing as you're told,
mm,
by our government,
yeah,
you are getting into some scary control issues.
Mm.
And also, you know, of course, as soon as you make a statement like that, then it has ricochets out into all sorts of other areas. That, you know, in some, there'll be people who sit there huffing and puffing and going, well, that's as ridiculous as saying that, you know, you can't come in here if you've got half a pound of Semtex up your skirt,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Fair enough. You could make a case for being allowed to carry Semtex around with you. You know, I really, really get it. And I get that there have to be rules, and there,
mm,
in a way, there have to be clubs that we're in or out of.
Mm.
And that there's not a hard and fast rule. I mean, I think at my core, I am probably essentially an anarchist, and that I would prefer to live in a world where there are no clubs and we self-regulate. because I think humans are far better.
We could.
Nicer,
we don't need
kinder.
Governments if we self-regulate.
Yeah,
we don't need
exactly.
a government at all. No.
Well,
the thing about that one that really gets me is it's illogical because vaccinated people can transmit disease
exactly.
just as much as unvaccinated people. So it makes no difference whatsoever whether there's a person who's vaccinated or unvaccinated. So for me, it's just, what the?
Yeah. Okay, so it's starting to filter down into me.
Mm.
So, talking of apartheid, apartheid is usually a word which is applied to segregation
yeah.
by colour.
Yeah.
Clearly, not something that's okay.
Yeah.
But I do think it's completely okay for there to be, for example, a women's circle which is only open to black women or women of colour.
Yeah.
I think it's also okay for there to be circles that are only open to people who were assigned feminine at birth, for example,
yeah.
simply because of, just to defend that place a minute, because when you are growing up in the patriarchy, even if you are now defined as a woman, if you grew up as a man, you're going to have grown up with the rights and the privileges of that man, and they were therefore
yes.
potentially, maybe,
yes.
I don't know. I mean, there, you know, my God, what a pickle.
Yes.
How could anyone possibly come down one side or the other on a fence like that?
Yeah.
You know, all I could do is put my hands in the air and just go, I really don't know.
Mm.
I really don't know. And I would hate to be the one that had to decide.
Yes.
And actually, hearing myself say that out loud, I would always be very tempted to say the door is open to anyone who identifies as female, unless there are people already in this group who are really super threatened by that. And it would have to be taken instance by instance. And there would have to be a really big and deep and heartfelt discussion about why are you threatened by that?
Yeah.
What's
and that
really
takes
going
us,
on here?
That takes us back to a village mentality versus what I call a city mentality.
Yes.
Well, the city mentality is lay down the law because there are so many people, there has to be a law about it.
Yes.
Whereas the village mentality is, well, we have a women's circle here, and oh, look, we have a transgender woman. Well, let's sit down and talk about it.
Yeah.
Let's sit down and talk with her about it. Let's
yeah.
sit down and say, what does she want? What do we want? How can we work this
yeah,
out?
Yeah,
how
yeah,
do
yeah,
we
yeah,
relate
yeah,
this
yeah.
to? And probably in the end, there could be some agreement. There might not be.
Yeah, but I bet there would be.
But there would be a lot more. There might be, would you be happy coming to some meetings but not the ones that are actually about menstruation or something like that?
Yeah.
But again, you would just talk it through and you would still be living in the same village, so you would have to deal with each other. You couldn't just run away and hide from it. And I think I know a lot of my fears have come from the fact that I have been able to run away and hide from things. And I've got used to running away and hiding from things.
So this is about the answers, or what's wrong with some of the answers, is that they are depersonalising and dehumanising.
Yes.
And that maybe that's where getting into little groups becomes wrong, when it's depersonalizing and dehumanizing,
yes.
and it's not looking at individuals.
Yes.
So maybe there should never be a rule about who can and can't come to this sister circle, for example, until a person wants entry.
Yes.
And when they want entry, there is a discussion.
Yes.
You person, why do you want to come in?
Mm.
Do we feel comfortable? All of us, you included, you and me, are we happy that we're on the same page, that we
yeah.
want the same thing?
Yeah. Even so, it's still going to be difficult for the person sitting who wants entry not to be afraid that they're going to be judged, but that's a very good first step.
Yeah.
And we have to talk about the I'm afraid I'm going to be judged.
Yeah.
Or we're afraid that you're going to judge us if we say we don't want you here.
Yeah. Because also, let's face it, you know, if we just stick with this one for a minute, with let's say it's a transgender person wanting to come into a women's circle, I would have thought that they would not be that interested in attending evenings that were all about menstruation. So what's the problem?
Yeah.
You know, the problem...
I think
come
most people,
to that,
there's no
they?
Problem. I
no.
I have a couple of transgender friends... And I've wandered into the ladies with one of them perfectly happily. And she's a male to female, and at that point she still had a penis. And And she was getting in quite a state about it. And I said, well, you're going in a cubicle.
Yeah. Who's going to know?
Who's going to know? I think it's just become impersonal. It becomes them. Are we going to allow them in?
Yeah, rather than
and
this
as soon
person.
As you've got them and they, you have a fairly unsolvable argument. The amount of times I see stuff on social media about they.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, totally agree.
There is no they.
There is no they. No.
There's a group of human beings, sort of, but it's not a they.
No.
And I actually wrote another letter to the Radio Times. Cool.
Is this his Meg Dickinson person again?
No, I wrote as me.
Ooh.
Actually wrote as me because I thought, well, they won't publish another from Meg Dickinson. And I just thought it was really important because they had an article this week by a top scientist with a title, Sir Something, and talking about how we must trust science.
Oh, must we?
Because he says, so, you know, we have to debate, you know, science is always developing, science gets things, you know, learns better things. But the headline was Time to End the Anti-Vaxxers or something like that. And I just sort of thought, I read the article and I just thought, this is so patriarchal.
Yeah.
Not that it was written by a man, but it was patriarchal.
Yeah.
And it was just this. So I just wrote a letter saying, look, as somebody who is a part of this group, as in a religious person, in a patriarchal religion, I'm pointing out that what you are doing with this science article is writing everything that everybody now hates about religion. So it's not about the religion and it's not about the science, it's about us trying to lay down the law to others because we're superior.
Yeah, and we think we know best.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure that... Just realising that I totally agree with you and I think we've strayed a very long way from wherever the hell it was
segregation.
We started. Segregation, yeah. And I love having these conversations with you, although it's just, I'm aware, it's really funny, I'm aware as I keep saying things which I don't wholeheartedly agree with, but I'm trying them out as kind of stances and just thinking, oh my God, someone's going to get this far, they're going to listen to me saying that. They're going to just go, that's the most horrible thing I've ever heard her say, and that'll be the last thing they listen to.
Oh, I have that just, fear all the time with this, because
do
I do say stuff like that. But doesn't that just point out the problem, that we're sitting here even...
In fear of judgment.
In fear of judgment for saying something wrong or saying something stupid. And the only way I was trained not to say something wrong or something stupid was to say sorry.
Yeah, totally.
And I actually... point this out to a lot of women. I still do tend to say sorry a bit too much, but I know a lot of women who say it all the time. And I started pointing it out and saying, why are you sorry? There's nothing to be sorry about. Mm. And we don't know we're saying it.
Oh, well, it's very English.
It is also very English, yes, that's true.
Awfully sorry. Don't mean to inconvenience you.
Yes.
It appears to be raining.
But also things like when we write an email, we say just to say, as in... Don't think
it's
I'm
of no significance.
It's of no significance. Yeah. I don't have a right to impose on your space.
Yeah.
Oh God, it's a huge topic, isn't it? And we're just sort of dipping our toes around the edges.
I tell you what though, if anybody out there's got a real sense of where's the line? Where's the line?
Yeah, where is the line?
Between little silly clubs where it's clearly okay to have a club because we love the dog. To the kind of clubs that are the rules that a nation might enshrine in its law.
Yeah.
And where's the line and what makes it okay and what are the parameters that make it okay? Because, you know, given that we don't live in an anarchist society and that we do have a government and with the intention, hopefully, of all of us to move away from the contorted patriarchy, where is the point? Or what is the point, or even why is the point, on what we decide for society as a whole by way of who's allowed in and who's allowed out. You know, I mean, in some ways, fundamentally, that thing of they, us and them, as soon as you've got a club, you've got they. You've got us and you've got them. As soon as there's a club and someone's not allowed in it.
Yeah.
And... there are many, many myriad ways in which that is not okay.
Yes. And yet we wouldn't want anybody in the club that loves Sappho who didn't know Sappho, because they couldn't love her. They would bring something into the... Excuse me, I'm walking away to help Sappho onto a chair. because I love Sappho. There you are, darling. You can get on your chair now. That's a perfect example, isn't it? So somebody who wasn't willing to move the packets of packed up CDs... God, people still have CDs. Yes, we have CDs. Most people don't, do they? No. So that Sappho can get on the chair. If you... I would posit that one of the places where it goes wrong is where people start making rules when they're not actually in the club.
Yeah.
They don't actually know Sappho. But they're starting to decide who should get to love Sappho. Yes. And that's a very appropriate name in the circle.
Yes. Totally. It wasn't lost on me when I started on it.
Yeah. So, of this stuff in America, which is gobsmacking at the moment about the 6-week abortion law in Texas, which has been put into law by people who don't have uteruses.
Yeah.
If any of the people who do have uteruses have put this law into such, they obviously aren't having sex. Sorry, that's a bitchy remark, but accidental pregnancies happen, and you don't necessarily know you're pregnant by 6 weeks. So to lay down a law saying you can't have a termination after 6 weeks has to be laid down by people who don't know what it's like to be pregnant.
Yeah.
And they're coming at it from the human life is sacrosanct. And they're coming at it from the religious point of view. They have no knowledge of the soul. They're acting as if a human being is a piece of meat.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as that meat is formed in the mother's uterus, that piece of meat is viable. And that comes back to when I talk about covetousness. This thing belongs to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, not this soul is here for an incarnation, and this soul has a relationship with its mother and possibly its father if it's going to be an aborted child, who knows. This is a much bigger, wider issue. But we can't see that. We close down in on the... I want to have control over somebody else's body.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's the Lucific truth, and that everywhere you go in this mother world, it's the Lucific truth, which is there is a soupçon of truth in this.
What's the soupçon?
The soupçon of truth is it's why would one want to have an abortion? It's a gift of life, and it's wonderful and marvellous. So, of course, it's not nice or good or wonderful to start a life and end it.
Mm-hmm.
Karmically, it doesn't help you.
Mm.
But on the other hand, there are so much around it that only those in that club can know.
Yeah. Yeah. What if you were raped? What if you were...
What if the child is non-viable? You know, and you won't know at 6 weeks.
No.
What if you literally will go mad if you have another child? What if you will die if you have another child?
Yeah.
What if it was a total and utter mistake and the morning after pill didn't work?
Yeah.
Because the morning after pill's allowed. The uterine coil is allowed. A coil gives you an abortion.
Yeah. But so I guess before 6 weeks.
Oh, way before 6 weeks. It won't let the egg lodge in the uterus. That's the idea. So it's all about these degrees, and I think everything is about it, and every single case is unique. But because there are so many millions and billions of us, we don't have time for the individual case.
Mm.
We don't have time to sit down and work it through.
But as you say, I'm really struck by that, slightly struck dumb actually, as a sort of back part of my brain is ferreting away with this, is that these are rules made by people who aren't in
the club.
Yes. Yeah. That I'm just sifting through all the ways in which the rules are made by people who they don't affect. I mean, like the one that always springs to mind with this kind of conversation is the bedroom tax. Mm. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
You know, that was made by bloody two roomfuls of men who've never struggled to put food on the table.
Yeah.
Who've never lived on benefits.
Yeah. And this £20 cut in universal credit, as somebody very, very accurately said, that's a bottle of wine for them.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or what about the doubling of bloody national insurance?
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, you know, that it's just.
Oh. But it comes back to covetousness, and or every. I do think it is the one thing you'll never hear a vicar apart from me preach a sermon on in church is covetousness, because they're sending the money plate around. Yeah, it's a collection at the end. And it's perfectly okay to ask for a donation towards the church. That's absolutely fine. But the emotional blackmail that comes with it is not. And the amount of... that's another subject, a whole topic to talk about, emotional blackmail, and how women do tend to use that a bit more than men, I think.
Really? The only person who's ever emotionally blackmailed me was male.
Really? Yeah. Oh, well, I'm very comforted to hear that. Okay. In a sad and sorry sort of way.
Successfully, I might add.
Well, I think part of the issue too is the why do we want to be in a certain club? I mean, for example, if there were a law that says you can't go to a nightclub or a place with more than 1,000 people if you're not vaccinated, and I wasn't vaccinated, I would question whether I actually wanted to go to that place. Why do I need to be there?
Because maybe you're 20 something and your favorite band ever is playing, or maybe it's a festival, or maybe it's, I mean, to me, I must admit, I look at these kind of rules rather cynically, and what I see are a bunch of rules specifically aimed at preventing young people from gathering in large numbers. Mm-hmm. And I think they're aimed to stop festivals, XR gatherings, any kind of revolutionary in the loosest possible sense of the word gatherings. This is going to make all of those things illegal. You know, if you can't bus millions of people up to Trafalgar Square to complain about 20 quid off the thingy, if you have to prove that they've all had a freaking vaccine.
Yeah, but I think we could just quietly revolt about that. They can't police 100,000 people.
No, but they can arrest a lot of people.
They can arrest a lot of people, yeah. And we got into they again, haven't we?
Well, all right. The police can arrest a lot of people, which means then that only the people who can afford to be arrested will go. And there are only a few people who can afford to be arrested. Either they are unemployed or they are pensioners. Mm. And, you know, thank God for the rest of us, a lot of unemployed and people and pensioners, or people who are self-employed and can take the risk, or young people who are still in full-time education and can therefore possibly take the risk, although once you've been arrested, if it goes on your record, for example, you will not ever be allowed into, I think it's Australia. Mm. And Canada, maybe? I don't know. I can't remember. Anyway, you know, potentially, once you've got any kind of arrest on your passport, you are starting to make the possibilities in your life smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah. And the more we talk about this, the more likely we make it.
Okay.
This is the one thing that I am struggling with at the moment. I really am. Because, yes, you have to highlight issues. Mm. But the more attention you give to them, the bigger you make them. And I've got to the point in my life where it's not that the law of attraction is more powerful around me, but I was complaining the other day, one of our dogs had to have some teeth out, took her to the vet, said to the vet, if there is anything else apart from this routine that is necessary that you find under the anaesthetic, you phone me before you do anything to get my permission. Okay, I'm a control freak, but I love Sappho. Yeah. Well, it wasn't Sappho, actually, but, you know. And when I picked the hound up, it turned out that they clipped her claws. Now, what does that matter?
You told them not to do anything without your permission.
Exactly. I got riled about it, and I've complained to several people, including you now, so I've activated again. And yesterday, our landlord stepped over the fence and trimmed the paddock because he was trimming the field behind us. Landlords aren't allowed on your premises without your express permission. But I looked at that and went, and then I thought, I attracted it.
Because you've been complaining.
Because I've been complaining about exactly that. So here we have this amazing and awfully difficult conundrum of there is a possibility that the police, the government, whatever, are trying to crack down on us. But the more attention we give to it, the more we draw it.
Oh, but we can't not attend to it.
I know, but what? So how? How?
I mean, partly back to the usual Susie theme. We have to create a new story. Of course yes. we do. And we have to give a lot of attention to that story. Yes. And we have to stop telling post-apocalyptic stories where everyone's become incredibly poor and speaks some barbarised version of all the languages ever. Mm. And so, yes, give ourselves, instead of a dystopian future to see as a future, we need to give ourselves a, you know, beautiful, full of flowers and daisies future on the one hand. But also, if we take our eye off all of this, before you know it, the government will have a bloody, you know, it's illegal to protest law. They're nearly there. And to me, part of what the media's for is to make sure we're distracted while we lose all our rights. And that, sorry, media person, but I do think that's part of some of it, you know, is just to go like, oh, look, someone's done something awful over here while we're squirreling away doing something really naughty over there. And that we can't afford to look away. We mustn't look away. And we mustn't look away from the awful things all over the world that people are doing to people.
But we must focus on creating more good than looking at the bad. I mean, Prince Charles asked the Times to publish more news when he was in his 20s, more good news. And annually, the Times devoted half of the front page, when it was still a broadsheet, to good news in honour of Prince Charles's birthday. That paper sold less than any of the other editions that year. So they did it for 3 years and then they stopped it because they lost sales and people wouldn't advertise that day. That's not the media. That's us.
That's human nature. Mm.
And every time somebody comes on to me about the media, I do defend it because I did not do this when I was in the media that I know of. Mm. That I know of. You can't complain about the media and keep watching it. You can't.
I don't watch it, to be fair.
I know. You cannot watch The Handmaid's Tale.
Didn't watch that one.
Get deeply involved with it and then complain that a dystopian future appears to be coming in front of you because you have absolutely invested your attention and your emotion in that image.
Reality.
And the human ego does not know what's real and what's not. It does not know that what you're seeing on the television isn't real.
Yeah.
It will still hit up your adrenaline if you see a car chase or somebody threatened on the TV.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what we are choosing to watch and then blaming actually hacks me off a bit. Because, yes, I'm sure the media is a problem nowadays, but who made it that way?
Oh, yeah, totally.
We did,
yeah.
So get off our high horses and start working for positive. Join Tree Sisters.
Yeah.
Do something good with the work. Preach sermons in churches about following Jesus, not worshipping him. I actually put that in my letter to the Radio Times. I have no expectation of their publishing that letter whatsoever. But I was actually saying, look, this is the way to go in that letter. And I think we have to work on offering solutions every time we see a problem.
I think you're right. I like that a lot.
So you've got a problem. Your job to look for a solution. My job to look for a solution. If I can't find a solution, then it's not my job and move away.
Make way for someone else.
I was saying to a friend of mine the other day who's a homeopath and an absolutely lovely woman, and part of her mission now is around vaccinations. And she was talking to me in a perfectly lovely way and in a way wanting to elicit my support. And emotionally, she had a lot of my support. But I said to her, not my job. I can only do my job. My job is within religion and comedy to hit down the patriarchy in religion. My job is to make LGBT people know that they are absolutely welcome in my church and in all churches and that I will marry them. And that is my job. If I go into your job, I won't do mine.
Yeah. Really well said. Sovereignty and service.
Sovereignty and service.
Do what's yours to do.
Do what is yours to do. And don't fuss about what is for another to do.
Yeah. Well said, Maggie.
Thank you. And that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. I managed to say something and it came out and I agreed with it.
And so did I.
See you next week, everybody. Thank you.